From the federal deficit to deficits at the state level, the governors have been meeting in Washington for a national conference on the many challenges they face, from deficits to angry public employee unions. One of the stars of the conference is New Jersey Republican Governor Chris Christie. Christie has become a national hero and model to Republican governors since his election in 2009. His brash style, his cost-cutting measures, and especially his willingness to take on the state's public unions have made him a governor to watch. Matt Bai has just written a profile of Governor Christie for the New York Times Magazine. You can get to it from our website, hereandnow.org. Matt, welcome.
Hey, nice to be here, Monica. How are you?
I'm great. Now, Matt, you write that there's something astonishing about the rise of Chris Christie. He was an unknown, a U.S. attorney with very limited political experience when he won in 2009. He didn't know what he was going to do, right?
I don't think he did. I mean, I was there in 2009 and wrote about the campaign and wrote, you know, pretty harshly of then-candidate Christie because it was a very uninspired campaign with very little by way of message or agenda or specifics, and he was pretty upfront about that. They made it a referendum on then-Governor Corzine. And so, you know, he says that when he got into office and he realized how serious the cash flow problems were, they had no choice but to look at how to deal with it, and that they, and that, you know, for him it became very obvious after talking with his team that the only real way to deal with it structurally over the long term was to deal with these pensions and benefits. But I do think I've been struck by a bunch of things about his governorship, but one of the things that really struck me coming back after watching him in the campaign in 2009 was how deft a communicator and a politician he actually is. He really does have a very sophisticated grasp of political messaging, and it's enabled him thus far to have quite a bit of success in New Jersey and quite a bit of success nationally.
Well, as you say, Christie got to office, didn't have a clear agenda, got a report from Goldman Sachs saying that New Jersey was going to run out of money in a few months, and he came up with a pretty bold response that came in about two parts. First, put a strict cap on local property taxes. Now they can rise no more than 2% every year. And second, he's counting on forcing local cities and towns to cut pension and health care benefits for public employees. Is it working?
Yeah, that's part of the plan, and it is partially working. He's got the point is that he's giving municipalities, or wants to give them, all of these, this menu of options, this toolkit of options they can use to lower their costs and thereby bring down property taxes and eliminate this need for massive state spending that goes back to the municipalities. This year is going to mark a real test of the larger issue of pensions and health care for teachers and state workers, which are a huge expense for the state and is a huge unfunded liability. There's a $100 billion unfunded liability in New Jersey on pensions and health care going forward that they've not funded, that they will need to come up with under the current system. He has made some inroads in that. In the first year, they passed a law that said teachers had to pay a percent and a half of their salary and health care, but there are proposals that are much have a lot more potential impact on the unions coming in terms of pension and health care this year.
Well, and this is what's given him, as you call it, his ideal adversary, the state's largest teachers union. They are one of his key talking points, and Christie has his own YouTube channel, in fact, where he posts many of his town hall meetings. And here he criticizes the teachers union for what he says is the accumulation and exercise of raw power.
My argument is not with teachers in New Jersey. My argument is with a union who collects, think about this now, I'll leave you with this, $730 a year from every teacher and school employee in the union in mandatory dues. That raises for the teachers union, get ready, $130 million a year. What do they spend that money on? An army of lobbyists in the State House.
And he goes on to say they also spend it on a lot of advertising against him. Are his arguments working?
Yes. I think, you know, I'd have to say based on polling, they are. I mean, his approval rating, you have to remember, it's a very Democratic state. It's been a very difficult economic time. His approval rating is hovering just above 50%. The teachers union in polls locally has an approval rating somewhere under 30%. The caveat to that, the danger in the strategy, the longer he goes at it, and you heard him address it right there in the first part of the clip you played, is this distinction between teachers and the teachers' union. If you ask voters in New Jersey, and for that matter, if you ask voters nationally how they feel about teachers, they're quite positive for all the reasons that we can imagine and sympathize with. They love their teachers. If you ask people what they think of the teachers' union, those numbers are considerably lower, and that isn't only because of the political power the union wields, but largely because of what's grown up around this issue of education reform and the notion that the union stands in the way of reforms on tenure and merit pay that most Americans and most parents would like to see. So keeping that distinction in the public mind, it gets more and more difficult for him with every month that passes, and I think is critical to the success that he's trying to have in making the teachers' union his principal adversary.
Well, you write the union made a couple of missteps, as you see them. One was a joke memo sent out by the head of a local chapter of the teachers' union, and it read in part, "Dear Lord, this year you've taken away my favorite actor, Patrick Swayze, my favorite actress, Farrah Fawcett." It goes on, "I just wanted to let you know that Chris Christie is my favorite governor." And Christie wanted the chapter head fired, but he wasn't. Did that hurt the union?
It did, but you know, Christie knows exactly what he's doing. I think he has come out in on top in just about every public battle with the union. That's one, and a fight over a proposed pay freeze being another major fight. And in both of those cases, he used it greatly to his advantage. He knows exactly what he's doing. I mean, in the case of the memo you just read, we all get that that's an internet joke, and it was in very poor taste, and it should have been called out, and maybe somebody should have been fired. But we also understand that that's probably not a serious threat on the life of the governor of New Jersey, right, because these things circulate around the internet all the time. He seized on that memo as a very serious breach of civility and a threat to him personally, partly because it gave him a pretext to cut off communication with the union, I believe, and to again make the union out to be the bad guy and the force standing in the way of change.
Matt, another union misstep, as you write, was that the union dug in its heels at the very beginning, refusing a pay freeze the governor was asking for. And you asked union leaders about this. What did they say to you?
I did. I do think it was a mistake. It's easy for me to say because I'm not a teacher, right? So it's not my pay freeze. But it does seem to me from a political perspective that when at a time when everybody else was giving up raises and was feeling very anxious about the economy, that had they acceded to his request for a pay freeze for a year after getting raises for several years, it would have been much harder for him to steamroll them on a whole variety of other issues. Instead of digging in and giving him a chance to paint them as intransigent, they are at this point butting heads with an adversary who's simply being much more long-term and sophisticated and strategic about his thinking, and that's why they're losing.
That's Matt Bai, staff writer for the New York Times Magazine. His profile of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie was Sunday's cover. And Matt, you were telling us about how the unions have been losing the political battle over pensions and pay to the governor. But is it fair to demand cuts from public employees when it's the employees, when the employees are not the ones who've been underfunding the pensions?
They've not. And what Christie says about this, if you know, because I put this question to him directly, I said, look, politicians haven't funded the pension for the last 17 years, so why is it suddenly the union's fault, right? And his point is, look, I'm not saying the union's created this problem. I'm saying we can't go back in a time machine. He literally says this. He says, you know, we have what we have, and we now have to deal with the problem going forward. They're the ones who get the benefits, and they're the ones who are going to have to pay the price for all the reckless decisions that have been made. Now, you know, that may or may not be fair, but it's also worth noting, and I didn't get into this in the piece because it's a level of detail that you know requires some explanation. But I'll say, Monica, because we're talking about this issue, it's worth noting that it's not really just the politicians at fault, because the unions bought off on a lot of this stuff. In other words, you know, when Christy Todd Whitman, as governor of New Jersey, decided she was going to issue bonds and put all the money from the bonds into the pension fund so that the state no longer had to contribute and the investment would just grow and grow and grow and grow and everyone would be happy ever after, and it didn't work out, she did that partially by striking a deal with unions. They agreed to that plan in exchange for a lower retirement age, in exchange for lower contributions on behalf of their members. So it's not as if the unions were standing by saying, you have to contribute, you have to contribute, and the politicians weren't doing it. There was more than enough complicity and blame going around in that almost two decades in which the state acted very recklessly. Everybody had a hand in creating the current situation, and the politicians more than anyone else.
Well, and Governor Christie says he's not pushing it off. off either, and he's getting a lot of political points, especially with Republicans, for attacking this issue head on. And when he talks about pension reform, as he does at town hall meetings, he basically admits he doesn't have to do anything.
I had a guy, a friend of mine, who said to me, so when might it go broke? And I said, 2020. They said, well, if you get two terms, you're out by 2017. What the hell are you doing? You're banging your head against the wall. Let the next guy worry about it. That's how we got where we are. Every governor's waiting, right?
So he's taking it on. But does this style work?
Well, we're going to find out. It's really too early to say whether it works or not, because we could be sitting here a year from now and say, boy, Christie looked like he was doing really well after a year, and then people got really sick and tired of the fighting, and you know, now his approval ratings have dropped 20 points, and that wouldn't shock me. But I do think there is a power in the modern public arena in saying to people, there are long-term problems, everybody's passed the buck, I know this isn't popular, I know a lot of people don't like it, but I'm going to be the guy who tells you the truth. And by the way, it's easier for Governor Christie to do than it was for previous governors, just as it is for some of these other Republicans around the country, because people are now willing to blame the unions. There's been a shift in the politics of this. People are frustrated that public unions are seem to have better deals than their counterparts in the private sector. And so, you know, it's not the politically destructive issue that it might have been at some point. You know, incidentally, there's a lesson here, I think, for the White House, too, as they look at some of these issues. I mean, you don't hear President Obama talking so much about, you know, making difficult, unpopular choices, you know, understanding that somebody somewhere has to level with the American people and tell them that there are some difficult decisions to be made. But I think, you know, if you look at how voters in New Jersey have responded to that at this point, I think you'd have to say positively. And it is because people have so little faith in the politicians, and they understand that a lot of recklessness has taken place and has to be addressed.
Well, as you say, Christie has sort of stumbled onto a national problem, and now he's become a national figure and a hero to conservatives. What about his national ambitions? He's been asked many times about whether he's running for president.
I mean, the talk never ends, and I've even had people in Washington who knew I was working on this, you know, said to me, I've heard Democrats say, look, he's the guy who scares me. I've heard Republicans say, there's no question to me, Christie's got to get into this thing. I talked to him about it a couple of times now. I honestly believe, as I'm sitting here, that he has no intention of running for president, that he means it when he's ruled it out. He goes around saying, what do I have to do short of committing suicide to convince you I'm not running for president? I don't think in this business you ever say never. Weird things happen at pretentious moments in politics, and I guess you could have a draft or something could happen in a convention. But I think Chris Christie understands he's got his hands full in New Jersey. I don't think he feels he's ready to be president. I think he feels it would be destructive to him to go out and run for president. I think he probably has enough of an ego to at some point consider it. But I think he sees the timing as really sort of prohibitive at this point for him, and I think he's quite serious when he says he's not running.
And do you think that in some ways his combative style could mean political suicide? I mean, he's saying things that people, he says, need to hear but might not get him back in office. Do you think people are going to get tired of it?
You know, I just don't know. It's a great question, Monica, and I just honestly don't know. I mean, well, you know, look at Rudy Giuliani, who came into New York, what was it, 1993, I think, and, you know, was sort of beloved for a while and cleaned up the city and the crime rate went down and there was this law and order campaign and Rudy Giuliani sort of sailed to a second term and he could not have won another term, I don't think, in New York. And he was, you know, basically reviled by a lot of the people who had voted for him because his style just wore on the city, and the more he looked around for people to beat up and new enemies, the more he seemed to stretch to find adversaries, and the more frustrated people became, and the more unpleasant the whole political atmosphere became. And I think, you know, I think that's a useful analogy for Christie, because I think people understand why he's having this fight right now. I think they understand the situation is dire. They're willing to hear him out. But to the extent that he jumps from one adversary to another, to the extent that he only seems to have one speed, I think that could be a detriment. On the other hand, I frankly think he is a more flexible politician than a lot of people give him credit for. I don't think it's his only speed. And I would be surprised if Christie spends his entire 4 years in the combative mode in which he spent the first year, because I think he sees himself fundamentally differently than that.
Matt Bai is a staff writer for the New York Times Magazine. Thanks so much.
Anytime. Nice to be here.